amenable to community-rich experience or supportive of farming. But that could go with land trusts or land easements too. I mean, there's got to be some sort of shift in how we're doing property value stuff and
development. I feel like the identity idea and this sense of values is a really important one. When I said that I think those values are still very much there, I think that they're there, but the fact that there are minuscule amount of actual family farmers left in this country indicates that even though the values are there,
the reality
is not matching it at all. So if you actually want to institute that sort of change, it's going to involve I don't know whether it's a revival or a shift or a visibility of what's actually there in contrast to the values that we're holding. I think that those things are put to use in politics quite often. But maybe retaking those values on a local level. I'm not sure how to phrase that as a question.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
I think one of the hard things is, and I'm still fighting a little bit why we're coming up with questions.
Well, you said the task, try to group the questions.
Right.
And yep. Which ones are already answered, sort of? They're kind of more like answers than questions.
But what I'm sort of seeing community-wise, I don't know how many people, if you went out and polled everybody, think about the family farmer.
I don't think they think about it, but I think when a politician gets up and says, you know, this is good for the family farmer.
Yeah. It is a model. It's a very dominant model.
It's all American.
Yeah, it may spin out, but what I'm thinking is, like with CSAs, there's a real difference between the people trying to promote it and the bulk of people who see the grocery stores where it comes from. And that if you're talking about changing community, that place of really getting a connection there. And you see it more and more where there's probably fewer people moving into areas that really have a connection to farm at all.
They have to somehow foster that, you know,
to
make them more aware of it.
How do you foster it?
And, you know, it goes back to the food system. And you were saying, frankly, you got into farming because you love food. That is a common denominator. I think everyone, to some degree, relies on food, just getting them to be more aware of their food supply and, you know, aware of the problems with, like, industrial food system and the cost of it and the dangers of it. That gets people's attention and makes them look for alternatives. In fact, when I did a little CSA back in the 90s in Georgia where there was just no support for that kind of stuff, the people that responded to it were it was a mother's group at a church, and they were all breastfeeding mothers, and they were so worried what they were eating. And they wanted to have organic produce, and they would sign off that CSA without blinking an eye, and that was all income levels because they wanted that safety. They were really afraid of the food supply.
And the thing about right there is that they were educated.
Yeah.
Education, I heard it all day today. Education, not only adults, but children.
And they were networked together. They were informing each other. It was interesting.
And educate so that people are aware of their values, that people are aware of where they stand on things. Because, you know, you'll ask anyone on the street, they want to be healthy. They want to put healthy things in their bodies. They don't want to eat pesticides.
They want tasty food.
But actions speak louder than words. They still go across the street to Hannaford. I'm guilty of it too sometimes. You know, like, so
price.
Educate them on their values and then give them the places to seek answers.
Like the newspapers that the Upper Valley guide. That
connect them.
And actually the website to that is really useful because you can just type in, like, you're looking for beef or something, and they'll tell you what farms and where that the beef is. So it's very easily usable. Just I've been looking for farms for students to go to. They all want to see grain. There's hardly any grain grown in this area. And I found there's one grain grower in Windsor, Vermont. Stone grinding is grain. I mean, a very rare thing, but you know, you can find it with these guides. And I think it is increasing people's curiosity about, well, what can I get locally? And maybe then you'll support someone. And maybe that might inspire a farmer to try. I think I'll grow some wheat next year just to see what I can get. Because I know some of my members of my CSA or the local farmers market are kind of, they're all demanding, they want their own local wheat. So let's try it. How much grain they used to grow in Vermont and New Hampshire? It used to be one of the main crops. It's possible, in other words. So that takes, I mean, I think this question of like, maybe less crops. I think that's not. I think flexibility is important. Making sure the farmers and consumers are aware that they need to be flexible with each other. And
I think we also need to look at the roles that we're expecting people to play. Whether we're encouraging more farmers, whether we're encouraging farmers to grow different crops, whether we're encouraging people to grow more things in their yards and their homes and their gardens, because all those things have impacts in terms of economics. If people are growing more food at home, there's less demand for food in farmers' markets. So there's a lot of feedbacks within this that define a community and get very, very complicated very, very quickly, I think. So I guess one of the questions that I would raise would be sort of what relationships we see between consumers and producers and between consumers with each other, and whether we see sort of hard and fast roles between those different things, to what degree they influence one another.
It's a huge education problem. I'm just thinking like general public, they're not going to feel comfortable or, I mean, first of all, it's easier to drive to Hanover to buy everything. I mean, we have people in our area that go to the Temple Wilton Market for everything, and that's like a half an hour drive either way, and there's probably more local sources. Isn't that crazy?
That happens in Poland,
too. Or that happens all the time,
yeah,
right?
People in Poland will go all the way to Rutland, 45 minutes away, to go to the food co-op, and I'm like,
but then just like
there's a farm right there. The guy has a farm stand that had that there,
yeah.
Or, you know, why does it put that farmer?
But then also consumerism is huge. Like, my mother, who makes me sick, like, loves Price Chopper because she can buy one and get one free. And that's, like, a huge part of, like, the general public. So
bargain.
8% of, right, what did they say, are
yeah, it's the biggest retail.
We should double our share price and say, buy one, get one free.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, you have that bin system.
I know.
There you go, that bin system. I'm ready to join your CSA and I'll have an hour and a half away. But we have to watch out, because a lot of the farmers I've been talking to over in Western Vermont, we've been trying to see what farmers are actually selling to our dining hall. And well, I'm like, I'm not interested. I'm plateauing. I'm reaching a point now where I don't want to grow. I'm successful doing the CSA, or I'm successful doing these farmers markets. And, you know, I don't want to bother with, you know, trying to supply wholesale or volume, because that's not what I'm specializing in. And I don't know how you feel, but I'm beginning to realize that that's not such a fun way of farming, doing volume and consistency and uniformity, which is what things like food services and wholesalers demand. I mean, that's why all of you go to these alternative, and there can be an alternative food system. We just need to support it.
There needs to be somebody that organizes it. The farmer's not going to do it. They don't
have
time.
I don't think they have the energy or time.
And the lunch staff that makes lunch at the schools aren't going to do
they don't
it
have the time either.
And so it really relies on the person being outsourced to say, yep, we're getting this farm's giving us this farm's giving us that, and really organize it all. Which, I mean, it's not in budgets, which goes.
You'd be surprised, though. I mean, there's a report out recently, Farm to College program, that shows that almost all of the initiatives for introducing local food into community dining halls and colleges is initiated by the dining halls themselves.
Right.
Yeah,
not
a lot
not
of
by
chefs
students, not
love,
by
administration. Love the chefs more.
Colleges, yes.
It's really surprised me.
Colleges, yes.
Yeah, but on a college, that would be the place where I would most expect students to be the ones to take
Right, but I'm, by college, I mean, you've chosen that college for a lot of reasons. I'm talking elementary students.
Yes.
It's true. They're a little more of a captive audience.
That's
if you had anyone approach you about getting food and your food in the local school? Is this the wrong season?
Like, my daughter goes to Waldorf school, and for us, the stability of the CSA is to have the diversity, having that many. So when I start to concentrate it into one school, then we lose that diversity. So we've not pursued anything like that, because if we lose a school account, then we've got to get a whole other school.
Right, it makes you more vulnerable. It's like it's almost like putting all your eggs in one basket. So I think the schools need to think creatively and think maybe they don't have to get supply all their lettuces from you, but feature you one whole week, and you get this little windfall of 1 week they're paying you all this money when you had the most lettuce or the most eggplant. They're going to feature your eggplant 1 week, and get all that excess eggplant off your hands. And so that's where a partnership, I think, where you have change in thinking about, let's support the local farmer and have eggplant goulash this week and feed the kids that, and have the farmer come in and talk to the kids, and there's the education part, or a lot of them go visit the farm. And they do that already at the Waldorf school, you said, but then they hopefully are paying you ultimately. I mean, that's a great service, but do they ever give you money for all that wonderful environmental education you give them? No, and that you're doing community building, but even I was feeling guilty taking college students to all these farms. We take about 2 hours out of the farmer's day. He educates my students. I'm like, you know, he should get a stipend or something.
Trade for work.
We did. We went and loaded trees one time, and, you know, sometimes they don't want us working for them. And, you know, we try to also provide the profiles we're working on, but it's just, you know, I'm like, God, there should be, and the orchard people got it figured out. They go, I called an orchard, they go, okay, that's $3 per student, because they know they have so many school groups come. And I'm like, well, we're just coming because we're college students, we're going to learn. He's like, $3 per person. And but I realized that that's a little, you know, crass, but I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. He is sharing their expertise, their time, their knowledge, and, you know, my students will learn so much that I'm not teaching really from the farmer.
Yeah. So I guess the question I'm hearing is, how can we integrate farming and education into each other?
And food. Farming food.
Welcome
farming
to my food master's degree.
So Amanda's going to write a thesis, and she's going to publish it, solve all of this for us. Yeah. It's a new issue.
But it's a never-ending question.
Yep.
There's no answer. Yep. So you make it what you make it.
Oh, the trends in the future?
Trends in the future. Like, what I'm thinking, like, just to use Keene as an example since we're here, is that our population is going to increase. And as much as nobody here wants to see it happen, things are going to become more suburban. And more little tracts of land are going to start getting these little roads that divide them up, and more houses are going to become up. So right from the get-go, before that happens, how can we figure out some sort of system where those people moving in, because they're going to move in one way or another, I mean,
unless the cost of gas goes up so high, they don't want to commute anymore.
Don't count on
it. But how can we get those people immediately tied in to farmers? I mean, to local farmers.
Well, we have down pat people.
Frank will take them all on.
She just had this manual called Preserving Rural Character in the last thing, and it's, so I mean, I don't know what that gives us, language and stuff like that. I mean, just to look at it.
They're doing it in other parts of the country. In the southeast, where there's been rampant development, I mean, literally one day you drive down a road, there's a farm, the next day it's a mall. They're realizing, they're doing lots of, like, you know, guerrilla land preservation, farmland preservation, because they are losing their rural character. Atlanta's like exploded, and it's shocking. It's actually a relief to come up here, because the growth is so much slower and gradual. Whereas there, it's just the rivers used to run red with the clay soil from the cotton farming. Now they're running red from the bulldozers clearing the woodlots to build houses and the farms. Another session here talked about farmlands, actually, where you're finding a lot of biodiversity, existing natural biodiversity. And, you know, we need to preserve farmland, even because in those woodlots and wetlands and hay fields, there's tons of great things going on, you know, right, natural communities, habitat. So that might be just linking up with conservation agencies, making them also, and the general communities, realize we need to preserve farmland for food and for, you know, the green space, the life support system stuff.
Do you think that municipalities should have a sustainable agriculture coordinator?
Yeah.
And someone that can try and work on these issues.
I think they have a lot of this out, like in Seattle and stuff, you know, and they, why can't we have it here? Why can't we have it?
It's funny. They're making quite a big
impact. Yeah, the Burlington model is exciting. That's true.
I've seen a lot of change here where somebody will come in. It's almost like the development surprised people. And I lived over near Merrimack until I couldn't stand it anymore. And I have come here, and I'm really worried about here. But people who buy a big piece of land, go to develop it, and then strip it, put in lots of houses,
and then leave.
Put in an inch of soil. And what I've seen, though, that drives me nuts is you see something just taken away that way overnight. Then you see maybe 4 years later people desperately trying to plant trees.
Oh, yeah.
And
the little teeny trees, yeah. They'll take decades to get rid of the ones they just chopped down.
And if there's this knowledge gap, you know, and it's like the people who are here, assume what we have, and then somebody in between takes it away, and then new people actually wanted that, but it wasn't there, and there's gap.
I think that's an infrastructure thing, I think. I mean, it's easier for the developer just to clear education.
Developer education.
But you could slow, the developers often are slowed down by like erosion, soil erosion laws, and they can't, I mean, there's ways you can, how much they're willing to pay the fines, but there are ways to discourage that. And you know, sometimes it's grassroots efforts. I saw grassroots efforts block things like, you know, Walmart coming in the middle of the historic area. They've organized for oak trees in historic areas. Oh yeah, I have that 4, 5, and 7 go together. Maybe infrastructure, economic, and political.
Like, I think we need nothing less than total revolution. Still,
there you go.
Still there. Like, I mean, I just heard on the news recently that we have exceeded, like, we have more prisoners than we do farmers.
I've heard that. Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. We're totally going in the wrong direction, and we need nothing more than total change. I mean, I think it's, and it has to start somewhere, though. I mean, it's not whether we're going to, you know, violently do it or we're going to peacefully do it.
That's why we need to talk more and talk louder.
Okay.
Little kids.
Well, they have the Innervale, which is kind of a community gardeny farm area that, and they have a director of it, and they coordinate with the city, and people can go and have their plots. They grow food there. Farmers can grow food there, and it supplies the Burlington. It's really close to the city. They're actually providing, and it keeps green space next to Burlington because it is fairly growing, one of the growing cities of Vermont, but it's maintained. The land is not to be developed for other than agricultural purposes. And it's,
more,
I think
sort of practical policy-based
now. There's not a lot to educate the population. I mean, you could go take your kids and explore the Innervale or go have a garden there, but also there's going to be a farm there.
Sorry, 4 is kind of the last one.
So it's kind of like the
concluding.
It's like an incubator. The original conception was to preserve farmland, but also to provide incubator space for farmers. They can't own it, but they can use it. And of course, all the young farmers, like my policies who want to be farmers, are like, I don't want to rent land or have a year for 3 or 4 years. I want to own my own. You know, it's really their passion. But this does work, you know, for keeping the land in production. And I met a few students at UVM that have started this thing called Refarm Vermont, where they are going in, where they're developing suburban areas and going into the pieces that are like between houses and back, saying, let's put some chickens in here, let's put some trees, and actually getting people to use those suburbanized land for more agricultural purposes, and keeping in people's minds that this is farmland, it's really rich, you need to keep producing here, and getting them kind of, you know, that's
level,
little things like that.
Levels
I think
analysis.
Grassroots organizations,
that's
you know, are part of a slow revolution. I mean, it's not overnight, but it definitely gets attention.
No, the numbers, the groupings, okay.
Probably the diversity, number 9 and 10 kind of go together.
Mm-hmm.
And,
shall we try to come back together and
something that